And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations. The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our drama today, I Scale a Wall, is a special program for this, the week of Memorial Day, and was written by Irv Tunick. It was late. Time to go. I'd been with Joe Press all day, talking with him and getting his story. I was deeply impressed with him. Deeply moved. And for want of a better way to put it, I said to him, You know something? You're quite a guy. And Joe grinned up at me.
Me? I'm just a guy named Joe.
And how does it happen that just a guy named Joe manages to do all that you do?
Well, my father is a very simple man, and yet in his way, very wise. The first time he came to see me in the hospital, he left me a Bible with a passage marked. I remember it every day. Wake with it, and walk with it. For thou art my lamp, O Lord, and the Lord doth lighten my darkness. For by thee I run upon a troop. By my God do I scale a wall. As for God, his way is perfect.
This is the story of Joe Press.
June will be 8 years. June 20th, to be exact. It was just after the end of the war in Europe. My outfit was stationed near Lyon, France. It was a hot day, so a gang of us made off for a little pond to take a dip.
Hey, Joe, what's this one gonna be?
This is a full dinner with an inverted triple twist, better known as the dive of the palpitating pretzel.
Okay, let her go.
I remember going under, my head hitting something, a rock, I guess. I was there, under the water. I couldn't use my arms or legs. They just wouldn't move. I didn't get panicky, not a bit. I remembered how a drowning person is supposed to float to the surface 3 times before he takes the final bow, so I waited. But nothing happened. I wasn't going up 3 times, I knew that. Not even once. All at once, I was aware that someone was swimming just over me. A hand brushed by, went past. I couldn't feel anything. I didn't know if it had touched me. I didn't know if the hand would come back. But it did come back. The hand came back, and the next thing I knew, I was being lifted up. Up and up. And my head was above the water, and I could breathe again.
Did you know how badly you were injured at first, Joe?
No, not really. You get kind of anesthetized at a time like that, and there's no pain, not much of anything. I guess the first time I realized I was pretty badly banged up was in the hospital at Reims. I was all alone, except for one very busy little fly. I was looking up at the ceiling, looking at some cracks in the plaster, and playing a game that it was a map of some jungle somewhere. And I had just figured out where the treasure was buried when this fly zoomed in. Well, he kind of looked me over. I looked him over. He got chummy and decided to investigate my landscape a little closer. First thing I knew, he lit on my forehead and settled down for a breather. I couldn't move my arms to brush him off, so I began wrinkling my brow, fluttering my eyelashes, but Mr. Fly just didn't move. He kind of sensed the situation and ornery little cuss that he was, he didn't move. And it was then, for the first time, I realized how helpless I was. That gave me some bad moments. But then the door opened and a doctor came in.
How are you doing, Joe?
Great.
Got some good news for you.
Well, I like good news. Let's hear it.
You're going home.
To the States?
No place else.
To a hospital near New Haven?
Not so far away. Framingham, Massachusetts. Cushing Hospital. They're equipped to give you all the right kind of care.
What's the verdict on my hands and feet?
We can't say definitely about that now, Joe. We're just not equipped to make the proper tests. They'll do that at Cushing.
Okay.
Anything I can do for you?
No. Yes. See that fly on the wall over there?
Mm-hmm.
Swat it. Well, they ran the tests at Cushing Hospital. I don't know how many, but plenty. And then I got the answer. A fancy word with a not-so-fancy meaning. Quadriplegia. Permanent paralysis of both arms, both legs. Oh, you want to know about my business.
That's right. How did you get started?
Well, here's exactly how it happened. One day, they were delivering mail in the ward, and the guy who passes out the letters and packages comes over to my bed with his face wrapped up in a smirk about a yard wide.
And now for little Josie Wosie. Got a package for you?
Well, I'll take the package, and you can keep the humor.
Well, I don't know if I ought to give it to you.
Come on.
You've been keeping something back from us, Josie Wosie.
What in the devil has gotten into you?
Nobody sends me perfume.
Perfume?
Mm-hmm. And what perfume?
For me?
For no one else. Some must have spilled in the package, made the whole mail room smell like ladies' night in the Turkish bath. And what it does to me. Woo-hoo-hoo!
Stop making like a sick wolf and hand it over.
First, you gotta promise me something.
What?
When you open up the stuff, just, let me dab a little bit on my ears.
Will you shut up and get out of here? It must be a mistake. Anyway, why would anybody want to send me perfume?
Oh, I would. Because I think you're very, very cute.
I'd throw something at you, bum. Only it so happens I can't throw. It was perfume, all right. All the way from France. Not from any girl, though. From a fellow I knew over there named Pierre Simon. This Pierre Simon and I had struck it off pretty well together, and I remembered that we'd always talk about how we'd get together after the war and go into some business. Well, naturally, I hadn't done anything about that, but Pierre hadn't forgotten, it seems. He had come across a French firm that was manufacturing this new perfume and were looking for someone in America to handle the distribution in this country. Pierre wrote me...
You can take my word, Joe. There isn't a better perfume on the market. It strikes me that you're just the guy to take over as national distributor of Janique for the USA. You've got the push and drive to put it across.
Push and drive. Me with four paralyzed limbs.
It'll take some doing, though. You'll have to travel around a lot.
Pierre hadn't heard about the accident, you understand.
But you've always said you liked getting around.
Or what happened to me.
So here's the chance of a lifetime. If the deal sounds okay, let me know at once, and we'll arrange the details. Best wishes, Pierre.
I sat looking at the letter and smelling the perfume from the busted package. I didn't know what to do. Laugh, cry, or just send it over to the Salvation Army.
Joe, is that some of the perfume there on the table?
Mm-hmm. Take a whiff.
Ah. Hey, it's not bad. Not bad at all.
That's just what our clinical director said when he first smelled it. He came into the ward, I guess it must have been the day after the package arrived.
Well, hello, Joe.
Hello, Doc.
Hey, what's this?
Hmm? What's what?
The smell.
Oh, that's me.
You?
Yep. Oh, my perfume. Yeah, help yourself to a whiff.
Thanks, but I can get it from here. Yeah, it's not bad. Not bad at all.
Not bad. I will have you know, Doc, that if the angels in heaven use perfume, they use Jalique.
And who's sending you perfume?
A friend of mine in France. I suppose he didn't know what happened to me, and he sent on these samples figuring I must be interested in acting as national distributor for the line.
Oh, he wants to sell them here in America.
That's the idea.
Look, Joe, I've got a friend who's a perfume buyer of a big store in Boston. I'd like to show him the samples if you think you'd like me to. You'd do that? Well, sure.
You know, Doc, I've been thinking. First off, when I got the letter, it almost made me laugh. And then I wondered, maybe it's not so crazy to think that I could take on the job. It's just a matter of contacts, and you can meet people by mail and by phone just as easily as in person.
Sure you can.
Doc, let's talk some turkey.
Yeah, let's.
Plain facts.
Plain facts, that's right.
Now, this is not just another occupational therapy deal, Doc. This is not the same thing. If I went into this, I'd have to invest money, a good-sized chunk of money. Not only that, but people would be depending on me. If I flop, they'd go under with me. You see that?
Of course.
So you can't look at this the way you'd look at some little handicraft job. This is big league stuff.
Yes, I know it.
Now, do you think it can be done? Do you think I can do it?
Why not?
That is just what I've been saying to myself, Doc. Just exactly that. Why not? Well, right then I decided I'd get to be an expert on foreign trade. I subscribed to all the papers and magazines on the subject, got all the books I could find. And pretty soon the space around my bed, what with books, papers, magazines, and samples, looked like Fibber McGee's closet. And then all of a sudden, four nurses swooped down on me.
Get all those books and magazines together. Hurry! And those books and samples, oh, for Lord's sake.
Here, what goes? What's up?
Inspection. The hospital manager's making the rounds. If he gets a look at this mess, I don't know what'll happen.
Well, wait a minute. Where are you going to put all this stuff?
The little room at the end of the ward. It used to be the treatment room. It's empty now. Everything in there.
Everything?
That's what I said. Everything. Including you.
The nurses moved fast, but not quite fast enough to get all evidence out of the way before Dr. Bruckner, the hospital manager, came along. He saw what was up, asked a few questions, and then left. Now, I figured the jig was up when Dr. Bruckner came down to see me the next day.
Well, I see you rate a private room, Joe.
Yes, sir. I've been put in solitary.
Like it?
I do. I like it fine.
What's this I hear about you going to business for yourself?
It's true.
You know, Joe, conducting a private business from a government hospital, it's a little unusual.
I suppose it is, sir.
Yesterday, after I heard about this, I went up to my office and looked up all the regulations. There's a pile of regulations on running a hospital like this, Joe.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Heaps of them. And I went right through them, beginning to end. You know, Joe, I couldn't find a single thing in all those rules and regulations that says a patient is allowed to run a business from a veterans hospital.
No, I guess you wouldn't.
But, on the other hand, Joe, I didn't find a single regulation that says you can't.
Doc, I can keep it. I can keep going?
You sure can. This the perfume you're handling?
Yes, sir.
I'd like to get a bottle of this for my wife. Maybe you can get one for me.
Wholesale. Just that way. No one ever saying, you can't do it, it's against the rules. Sorry, Joe. It's been just the opposite. Everyone trying to help. Pitch in and help. Inside the hospital, outside, too. Are you a religious man?
Well...
Now, wait a minute. You're supposed to ask me the question. So you ask me if I'm a religious man.
Are you?
I wasn't so much before this happened. Now I am. I see a lot more now than I ever did before. But then, of course, I've had a lot of time for thinking. I've come to realize that we're not put here merely to be born, exist, and die. If we're made in the image of God, then we're made to live life to the fullest. To be active. To make the world just a little better for having lived in it. I'm sorry. You didn't come here to listen to a sermon, I know, but I believe this thing. I believe that the willingness to help is a basic human instinct.
My own experience has proved it. Like the steel deal, I didn't tell you about that.
No. I'd like to hear it, though.
Well, once I got into this foreign trade business, I went whole hog. I began to look for other items besides the perfume. So I read up on trade regulations, currency restrictions, foreign trade reports, and I must have sent out, a couple of hundred letters before I got my first real bite. It came in a letter from Brazil.
Brazil? Well, what did they want?
Barbed wire.
Barbed wire?
Yeah, 200 tons of it. Now, there are a lot of things you can get in the hospital, but barbed wire isn't one of them. This was a toughie, believe me. I talked it over with Doug, one of my buddies here in the hospital.
You mean you'll have to turn down the order?
Well, it isn't even an order, Doug. They just say that if I can ship it, they'll buy it.
Well, that sounds like an order to me.
No, well, you don't understand. You see, this barbed wire stuff is on allocation.
Well, ask around, maybe.
No, no, there's not a chance in the world. Mills can't even deliver to their regular customers. They sure aren't going to deliver for me.
It's a good order, though, isn't it?
Oh, it's a peach. It's the biggest order I've ever had that I couldn't fill. And then do you know what this screwball Doug did?
What?
He sits himself down and writes a letter to Benjamin Fairless, the president of the United States Steel Company, no less. He writes, tells him the whole story, and so help me. A couple of weeks later, a guy walks into my room, a fellow I never saw in my life before, and he introduces himself.
My name is Jim Phillips.
He is from U.S. Steel, and he says to me,
I've been sent down here to help you in every way that I can. Now, you've got your barbed wire. Is there anything else that you need?
Well, and that is the way it's been all along the line. Listen, I want to... Well, I want you to make sure you put this in your story. I'm not a self-made man. Make that strong as you can. I'm not a self-made man, and I'm darn proud of the fact. I have been helped. Helped by people, friends, by organizations, the Disabled American Veterans, Red Cross, Jewish Welfare Board, all of them. By all of them, I've been helped, and I'm better for being helped. That's the truth.
Well, maybe that's true in your business, Joe, but... Well, it isn't true in what you've done for yourself. Physically, I mean. That's one thing you can take credit for yourself.
No, don't you believe it. Let me tell you about that, as long as you brought it up. One day I was in my chair dictating a letter to my secretary, Mrs. Schofield. Suddenly I got an idea. Wild, impossible, but something inside of me said, why not? So I got myself wheeled over to the gym. I got hold of Frank Glass, the instructive superintendent of corrective therapy.
What can I do for you, Joe?
I want you to work with me, Frank.
Oh.
Well, now wait. Don't tell me it can't be done. Don't tell me that there has never been a quadriplegic that could get around by himself. Don't tell me, because I'm not interested. I want you to work with me, Frank. If you can't teach me to walk, then teach me to ambulate, whatever that means. Just so long as I move around by myself. Will you work with me, Frank?
You betcha.
Okay, how do we start?
What do you want to do first?
Sit up by myself.
Okay, I'll lift you off the chair. You ready?
Let's go.
Let's get over to that floor mat.
All right.
Here we are. Easy, I'll put you down. Now, ready?
All ready.
I've got you, don't worry.
I'm not worried. So let me go.
Now, wait a minute, Joe. Get this straight. You're going to fall over.
Yes?
You understand that?
Sure I do.
What happens when you fall over?
I yell for you to sit me up and I try again.
And if you fall again?
I try again.
No matter how many times you fall?
No matter how many times I fall.
You're my man, Joe. Here goes.
And how did you do?
I fell over. Sure, I fell over a couple of hundred times. But I found out something. I found that by shifting my head, I could balance myself. It took lots of practice, but I caught on. And pretty soon I was sitting up myself. Without help. I felt pretty good.
I bet you did.
So then I decided to try something else. Rolling over on my back. I started out flat on my face.
Okay, let's give it a try.
All right, Frank.
What's the matter, Joe?
Frank, just then when I tried to move. Frank, I felt the muscles in my chest move.
Are you sure?
I'm positive they moved. I felt them. Frank, I've got life in my chest. How that boy Glass worked on me, on my chest, massaging and kneading the muscles until they got solid strength in them. Once I had that my way, the rest came. I learned to shift my weight. I got between the parallel bars and shuffled along, first just inches at a time, then the length of the gym, and then outside in the open. Walking in the open almost a quarter of a mile, the two of us, Frank and I. We did it.
And now you do just about everything else for yourself, don't you?
Oh, sure. I type, I shave, I can use a knife and fork. I get along okay.
That's wonderful.
But always, always it was someone helping me, someone with patience and understanding and willingness. And that's the point.
And your business?
Well, while I was at Cushing, I laid the foundation. Last year, I was discharged from the hospital, and then, along with Jim McDonald, we started this traveling gift shop here in Marlboro. We sell the stuff we import by home demonstrations and through club plans. We've got 20 salesmen on the road right now. Jim and I have the idea to set up the same kind of a plan to sell the products of the homebound in the same way. Not charity, mind you. Strictly business.
I understand you and Jim turn over a percentage of your sales to the National Paraplegic Foundation.
Yeah, that's right. That's what we want to do.
Joe, I've got one last question.
Sure.
Well, it's kind of a corny one, but it's one we always ask.
Well, go ahead.
In all that's happened, and plenty has happened, what one thing gave you your greatest thrill?
That's a tough one. I've gotten a bang out of a lot of things. My first order, my first step, the day I was able to convince my dad to quit work that I could take care of him and mother. Yeah, there have been lots of pretty good moments. But I suppose the best of all, the thing that really sets me up, is the letters I get from other handicapped folks. From people who have heard about me, who have gotten a little inspiration out of what I've done. Like this that came in this morning. It's from Texas, Kingsville, Texas. It's from a Mrs. Brining down there, and she tells me about her son, 10 years old. Joff Brining. The youngster was hurt in an accident, and he's paralyzed from the waist down. He's heard about me, and what I've done has given the kid heart. Isn't that great?
It sure is.
I just finished a letter to Joff.
Okay, can I hear it?
Oh, sure. I'd like you to. Dear Joff, you and I are suffering from an injury which has disturbed, not changed nor altered, but only disturbed the normal course of our lives. Actually, what we have lost is only the ability to move quickly and gracefully between two points. The most important thing is that we have not lost the power to think nor the power of expression. But during the time you are handicapped in those fields which require physical skill, I suggest you develop your other skills. Put your efforts into mental and spiritual development. In the long run, it'll bring you more pleasure and greater rewards. For the courage you have shown up to now, I want you to have my unit citation ribbon. In actual value, it isn't very much. But it represents a victory brought about by determination, skill, and courage. I prize it highly because it was awarded to my outfit for outstanding performance against the enemy. You keep this ribbon, Joff, and make it a symbol for the determination and courage which will result, I know, in your eventual victory. Cordially, Joe Press.
You're quite a guy.
Me? I'm just a guy named Joe.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York, 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting General J. Lawton Collins, Chief of Staff of the United States Army. General Collins.
The courage and initiative displayed by the soldier whose story you have just heard is a heartwarming illustration of the splendid qualities possessed by American fighting men of all services. Their magnificent spirit of patriotism and self-sacrifice has sustained our country through many periods of great danger in the defense of our freedoms and our way of life. This week, on Memorial Day, we will honor those servicemen who have unselfishly given their lives for their country. Those brave men who have sacrificed their lives in Korea give a special meaning to this honored day because on a battlefront more than 5,000 miles from home, our way of life is once again being defended against a brutal enemy, militant communism. We must face frankly the fact that power is the one thing in the world which the communists respect. There can be no assurance of permanent peace until we and our friends can stand against aggression wherever and whenever it strikes. There can be no assurance of peace until good deeds, and not just soft language, show the intentions of the potential foe we face. To honor those who have died in Korea and their comrades who have perished on other battlefields, the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier stands in Arlington Cemetery. It is a reminder to us, the living, of our great debt to our fallen heroes. I have often felt that there is a significance to this memorial that we Americans sometimes overlook. For in the honors accorded this one anonymous soldier, there is symbolized more than the sacrifice of war and more than the homage to military dead. I think that here is a basic tenet of our way of life, perhaps the very epitome of democracy, the deep and abiding belief in the importance of the individual citizen, whether he happens to be wearing civilian garb or a military uniform. The duty of all Americans, as I see it, is to maintain our course with the same courage and vigor as has been shown by the soldier whose story you have just heard, and by those who have fallen in battle in our defense. We can best keep faith with those we honor this week by recognizing and shouldering the responsibilities and obligations which accompany our liberties and opportunities as American citizens. Our beloved dead would wish for no greater testimonial than that each American should examine his heart and conscience to see whether he is doing all that he can to perpetuate the basic principles they so revered.
Thank you, General Collins. Our Eternal Light drama today, I Scale a Wall, was written by Irv Tunick and presented for the week of Memorial Day. John Larkin was featured as Joe Press and Robert Carroll as the reporter. The production was under the direction of Edward King.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.